From WHYY in Philadelphia, this is The Why. I'm Shai Ben-Yaakov.
And I'm Annette John Hall.
Today, we're bringing you part two of our co-reported series with the Philadelphia Inquirer. If you haven't heard part one, we encourage you to take a listen and subscribe by going to iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.
In part one, we started bringing you the story of the Thompson family. 20 years ago, they were farmers in Jamaica, making a good living.
Looking from the outside to other people, it seems like we had money.
Yeah.
So 24 acres was like, whoa, you know what I mean? These people have money, they have a home, you know, they have a car. I think that's what they was looking at when they asked him to join their gang.
Now, they're one of three immigrant families taking sanctuary in churches in Philadelphia to avoid deportation.
In today's show, we want to keep following their story so we can answer some big and small questions. Big, like, how is the American immigration system changing? And small, like, can they get out of sanctuary?
Today's show, Risking Sanctuary, Part 2. So when we left off yesterday, we had just detailed why Clive and Juanita Thompson say they fled their home. They're afraid of the gangs that allegedly killed Juanita's brother.
He had bullet holes, like, everywhere.
And burned down the family's farm.
Because when you light the sugarcane, you could see the fire. And I know I'm the only sugarcane farmer in that era.
They came to the U.S., applied for asylum, and lost.
WHYY's Laura Benchoff and the Philadelphia Inquirer's Jeff Gamage have been reporting this story.
So guys, can you tell us? We know why the Thompsons fled Jamaica, but why do they now want to stay in this country?
In short, their two youngest kids were born here and grew up here.
My name is Christine Thompson.
Christine is 16 and her little brother Timothy is 12.
My favorite classes are English, math, and I like physical education.
The rest of their kids also have some one form or another, basically, of legal immigration status in the U.S. But only Christine and Timothy have been living in the church with their parents, and they've been there for about 5 months. And they've kind of been handling this big change in their life situation differently. Timothy, total preteen boy, says he was playing a video game when his mom told him they were going to be moving into a church.
I was surprised because my mom came upstairs and told me. I was like, oh.
And
he just said, oh.
Yeah, you know, he's 12. But they both had to start over moving from far South Jersey to Philadelphia. And Christine, she knows and she's very in touch with just how high the stakes are for her family right now.
I'm actually happy about the decision of moving to the sanctuary compared to being separated. Because I get to still be with my parents and still talk about my day. And I still get to hug them and sit next to them.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Was there something specific that changed and altered the family's path?
President Trump reordered the nation's immigration priorities. Under President Obama, if you were living in the country for a long time, if you had children who were American citizens, if you did not commit a crime, and if you checked in with the government through ICE regularly, you were allowed to go on living your life for the most part. President Trump said, we're not going to do that anymore, that if you were deportable, you have to leave.
Can we just back up for a second? Laura, can we define this term asylum? What does it actually mean?
Asylum was formally defined in 1980, and it is basically the U.S.'s commitment to this international idea of humanitarian protections for people who are fleeing some form of persecution. But it defines those forms of persecution. You need to fall into one of five categories to qualify for asylum. You need to be fleeing some form of violence that you are suffering on the basis of your race, your political opinion, your religion, your national origin, or because you belong to some specific social group.
Why didn't they qualify?
The court said that the Thompsons were not victims of the kind of harm or the kind of danger that would qualify them for asylum. It said they were victims of general criminal activity. The other thing that's occurring is that the case law for asylum has been expanded over a period of years. Under President Trump, people like Jeff Sessions, the former attorney general, have been trying to roll that back.
Asylum was never meant to alleviate all problems, even all serious problems, that people face every day all over the world.
The court also said that Juanita had shown she could live safely in Jamaica because she fled to her mother's house, which was about an hour away after the fire. And the court asked, why couldn't she continue to live there or somewhere else that she would be safe?
So it seems like there's a lot of material that you need to produce to prove asylum. How many people actually clear that bar?
Only 1 in 5 people who apply ultimately receive asylum. Very often, people who are fleeing very dangerous or troubled homelands, they lose things. They don't bring things with them. A lot of the documentation they would like to have is not there. Laura and I tried to check as much of the Thompson story as we could in Jamaica, and it was hard even for us. The police told us that the records from 1999, the homicide records, had been lost. We were able to confirm she had a brother. She had a brother who died on the date that she said he died. He's buried where she said he was buried, but we couldn't confirm the circumstances around his death.
So the administration changed, the policy changed, and the Thompsons lost their case. Then what happened?
So Clive and Juanita, you know, they'd been checking in with ICE every year or so for a few years. And then they say when they went back to the ICE office in Newark in 2017 that just the whole atmosphere had changed.
It was look different. You can know everything was just fear. Different people with guns standing up at the door like security guard. You got to beep yourself in.
There were locks on the doors. And while that visit, they weren't immediately told to leave. Last August, Clive got a call from an ICE deportation officer while he was at work. And he checked his voicemail while he was on the floor at his job at Cumberland Dairy, where he was operating machinery to package dairy products.
And I go back inside the factory. And I go behind the machine and I was lying down like this and I was crying. I don't know the call, what it was for.
The deportation officer said Clive and Juanita had 8 days to buy one-way plane tickets to Jamaica and leave.
How did they react to that?
You can't even believe it's happening. Like, you're talking to yourself, like, is this real? Am I dreaming?
They described being both angry and powerless and sad. And
you're looking at your children and everybody's crying and you're trying to stay strong, but you have to run to the bathroom to just scream in there like...
And sort of reaching in all directions for some solution that would let them stay. And they found out about the new sanctuary movement of Philadelphia, and with a few days to spare, they packed up a van, they bought a couple of inflatable mattresses, and they snuck into sanctuary.
So, Laura, it seems like the Thompsons have a sympathetic story, but they did break the law. So what do we make of this?
I think we just have to take their story in context. We know, based on the government's own records, that in fiscal year 2017, more than 80,000 people were removed from the center of the country. This is one family. This is a very small piece of looking at this whole picture of how our immigration system is functioning. And we did talk to ICE in our reporting just to get a sense of how they view people in the Thompson situation. And they said, you know, we do see that there are people with sympathetic stories. We are sympathetic to people who are being told to leave who don't want to. But, you know, we're really just following the law. And the law says you don't have permission to be here anymore.
But I'm trying to put myself in their shoes. They came to this country on a tourist visa, which is legal. They applied for asylum, which is legal to do from the United States. At every stage, they were doing things legally. It was only at the very end of this whole process that they fell into this category of being eligible to be deported. Is there an argument that the government can't let someone stay here legally and then tell them to leave 14 years later?
There's kind of two schools of thought about that. One is, well, it's unfair to immigrants if you let them stay, as you said, for 14 years living and working and then tell them to leave because our process, the U.S. process, is too slow, that we should really extend them some way to stay if we've let them stay for that long. The other school of thought, which people like Roy Beck, who is the executive director of Numbers USA, this group that wants to lower immigration, brings up is...
Simply being here for a long time does not give people a right to stay here.
It's the idea that, you know, rules are rules.
Jeff, what exactly are the Thompsons waiting for to be able to leave the church? Is there hope of that happening?
There is hope of that happening, but it's only a hope. And in the meantime, they're trying everything. They lobby elected officials. They have supporters who hold demonstrations outside of the ICE office at 8th and Cherry in Center City.
We also wanted to remind this building that holds a lot of power to soften their hearts and to grant a stay of removal for both the Thompson and the Reyes family. And we're going to be praying.
Letter writing campaigns, petition signing campaigns. But their biggest hope is that one of their elder daughters can qualify for citizenship. And if she can do that, she would be eligible to get visas for her parents. But that whole process could take years, and it's very uncertain.
So what are they doing in the meantime?
Trying to live as normally as they can in a church. They pray a lot because they have a strong Pentecostal faith. They're parenting their children. The day that we were there, their son wanted pancakes, so they made him pancakes in the big communal kitchen.
Can you bring me a paper, please, Tony, and put a piece of file paper over it, please? And thank you.
Their other son has dropped out of college to try to keep their house, so they're sort of trying to support him from afar. They're emailing congresspeople, they're fundraising, and they're really just waiting.
Jeff, Laura, thanks for coming in and talking to us about this.
Thanks so much, guys. Thank you both.
Thank you.
There's so much more we wanted to tell about the Thompson story, but we ran out of time. To read more, go to whyy.org or philly.com.
And that's it for the show. The Y is produced by me, Annette John Hall, Alex Stern, and Kelsey Hansen, with editorial direction from Katie Colinari.
Special thanks to Laura Benshoff, who produced today's episode and reported it in collaboration with the Philadelphia Inquirer's Jeff Gamage. We had editing help from the Inquirer's Kathy Hacker and Daniel Rubin and WHYY's Sandra Clark.
Let us know your thoughts on the Thompson's case. You can tweet us at Shai Benyakov, at Annette JH, or at Alex Ray Stern.
Subscribe to the podcast, please, and leave a review.
We'll be back tomorrow.